Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Dr. Amit Goswami, and we're going to be talking about his very newly released book, The Everything Answer Book, How Quantum Science Explains Love, Death, and the Meaning of Life. Dr. Goswami's basic premise is that quantum physics is not only the future of science, but also the key to understanding consciousness, life, death, God, psychology, and the meaning of life. Quantum physics is an antidote to the moral sterility and the mechanistic approach of science materialism, and is best and clearest approach to understanding our universe. In short, quantum physics is indeed the theory of everything. This fascinating new book will appeal to a wide variety of readers, ranging from those interested in the new physics to those captivated by the spiritual implications of the latest scientific breakthroughs. Dr. Goswami is a theoretical nuclear physicist. He received his PhD in physics from Calcutta University in 1964 and is a former member of the University of Oregon's Institute of Theoretical Science. He is best known for his appearance as one of the interviewed scientists featured in the 2004 film, What the Bleep Do We Know? You can find out more about Dr. Goswami by visiting his website, which is amitgoswami.org, and I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Dr. Goswami to the show. Good day, sir.
Yes, I'm glad to be here, Robert. Thank you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. I always feel enlightened by the time I get finished talking with you. Yeah, we first talked with quantum activism, which really got my attention, and then the quantum creativity. We talked about that, so I'm really looking forward to this one. So, let's first of all, this book is different from the two that I mentioned before, in that this one, it seems to be written much simpler, in a much simpler manner, and with just brevity. I mean, just real kind of clear cut to the point. So what inspired you to write this particular book?
Well, actually, you know, it came out from a conversation. I was invited by a Japanese group, and they were aware that my books have not been translated in Japanese yet, so they were very eager to publish me in Japanese language. So they arranged for me to converse with a philosopher who is also a businessman, and out of those conversations, that's the book you're seeing. And because it had to be intelligible to a business person, so naturally I was sort of relaxed and went out on a limb and became more simple than I usually capable of.
It's interesting. When I read your other books, many times I will have read, you know, a section and then find myself going back to reread it once or twice because it just seemed to have a whole lot of information that I really wanted to grasp, you know. And with this book, though, I mean, I can at first, you know, first read through, things were just very clear. And I think that's going to really appeal to many people who really just want to have an idea, but they just don't really have to feel necessary to have a whole lot of background information.
Yeah. I think that you have the right spirit. It's just that, you know, I have always been a little too scared of my colleagues finding inaccuracy and therefore not as relaxed as I need to be to write. And then with this book, I think I sort of had a breakthrough because while conversing with this wonderful gentleman, I relax and just let it be, and one can express these ideas in simple language. Once this discovery has been made, now I know I write much simpler now. So, you know, listeners, please remember. Don't be afraid of quantum physics anymore.
Well, there will always be critics, you know, and especially when you're coming up with things that run contrary to people's beliefs and their work for maybe a lifetime of work. Sometimes people will get critical, but you know, that's okay. You know, I mean, if anything, it creates discussion, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So for the listeners who may not have listened to our previous shows or may not know much about quantum physics, can you kind of just give us an overview of what quantum physics is?
It is actually better doing it that way, because otherwise we come back to it, you know. I have tried to explain it from the middle, but then we always come back to the basics. So the basics part stuff is that the word quantum means discrete quantity in physics, but that just says that energy consists of discrete quantities like elementary particles. So energy is quantized. Energy consists of quanta, just as matter consists of elementary particles. So that's the basic meaning of the word quantum. But then this very famous scientist named Einstein, he pointed out that this causes a paradox, because light is energy. So light then must consist of elementary particles, and indeed these particles we call photons today, very well known. Everybody knows light consists of particles. But it is also true that ever since Newton, we have known that light also consists of waves. Why is that a puzzle? How can light be both wave and particle is a puzzle, because waves can be in many places at the same time. But particles can only be in one place at one time. So how can the same object be localized like a particle and also spread out like waves can? This paradox stayed and bothered many people. And then it was found that matter also is both wave and particle. Then really the paradox thickened and we have quantum physics. So what is the explanation? How is the paradox resolved? It turned out that the explanation is absolutely startling and worldview-shattering. Because for 400 years now, many people believe, including today, even today, most scientists are still under delusion, although physicists know, but scientists who are not physicists, they don't know, that there are two domains of reality. Quantum physics forces it upon us. There is a domain called domain of potentiality, where these waves reside. Only when we measure these waves of possibility, they become particles. That's the resolution of the paradox. One indeed cannot have both wave and particle in the same domain of reality, namely space-time, domain of actuality. So in space and time, everything is particle. Wave and all objects become particle. That means in terms of objects that are familiar to us, like a thought are waves of meaning, but when we actually think, it becomes a thought of actuality. An actual thought is a choice of a particular meaning rather than all kinds of meaning that a wave might represent. So in this way, waves become particles when we experience them. And this, if one can comprehend, one also realizes that all our experiences come from waves of potentiality. We not only have potentiality for material experience, which we call sensing, but we also have potentiality for vital energy experiences. We call them feeling. And then we have experience of meaning. We call them thought. And then we have even experiences of archetypes. And we call them intuition. So four kinds of objects of experience, four kinds of potentiality of consciousness. And when we choose with our consciousness, then the wave become a particle, a manifest experience. So our choice in the that primacy of consciousness state, one consciousness state which we call the domain of potentiality, in that state, which is unconscious as usually, in that state we choose. And that choice makes actuality for us. So it's a little subtle, because you are not then choosing in your ego consciousness that we experience when separateness already has set in. So you have to let go of the separateness and realize that if we let go of the separateness, then our tendency is to fall into that unconscious where we are not separate. If we allow us to choose from that unconscious, then every now and then we take a quantum leap of creativity, and then we can manifest new things in our lives, like changes in, you know, our emotional status, changes in happiness, what have you. Nothing is impossible.
Well,
the
two domains, you know, the potentiality and actuality. I mean, just the idea of recognizing, you know, that multiple domain, that in itself, I think, you know, kind of stump people, you know, because we're so conscious, we're just aware of the actual, that, you know, that that domain of potentiality just is elusive, it seems, you know.
It is a fact that many people, even though the idea has been common practice in religions and spiritual traditions, but it is true that when actually pictures are made of this domain of potentiality, then people always have the tendency of identifying it with something physical, just a little bit remote from us. For example, Aristotle's rendition was that it's outer space. That, of course, was totally wrong. Science proved that no, outer space is also just the common space that we experience on Earth. That's not different.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that confusion is common, and we have to expect that people still have that kind of confusion. But we just have to accept it. This is the domain of oneness. So I'll tell you how to experience it. It's not very difficult. I mean, you have to allow your mind to be tranquil, not be bothered. So how do you do that? Well, we are very busy these days. So we have to, first of all, calm yourself down. And the way to do it is meditate once in a while. And it's just meditation. It's just sitting, you know. Real meditation eludes us for a long, long, long time. So don't even bother. But if you just sit, put your worries down and just sit for 5-10 minutes at a time, and that's enough. That will slow you down enough. Now you can sit by the river and you can look at the water, or if you are so lucky as to see a sunset, and if you are so lucky that you are seeing a sunset with a loved one, then in those moments, you know, things happen like oneness. All of a sudden your mind falls into a peaceful quality which has depth. And when you are touching that, you will notice that you are becoming happy inexplicably. This inexplicable happiness is the characteristic of that oneness. Do you fall into it? I bet you do. Just be sensitive to notice it. And if you notice it, then make it happen every now and then. It's very refreshing. You know, that Red Queen told Alice that I have impossible things. I experience at least 6 impossible things during breakfast. I wish I could say I experienced this wholeness, 6 of them even before breakfast. I tell you, but I experienced at least one of them during the day. And this is wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, once you experience it, once you recognize that sense of oneness, first of all, you know, for people who have difficulty with it, once you do, it becomes easier. You know, I mean, you know, if you're constant, so getting that tranquil moment, you know, it gets to be easier the more that you do it, and those moments are special. Now, one of the things you mentioned that you mentioned consciousness, you know, in the sense of, you know, we make, you know, conscious choices, and then we want to get to the point of unconscious choices. So I guess can you tell us or talk a little bit about the idea of consciousness? Now, I noticed in your book that you referenced Ava Hare, and, you know, and I love her. She has so many good conversations with people about consciousness that for people who may not really have an understanding of what consciousness is, can you talk a little bit about that? And then what's the difference between conscious, subconscious, and unconscious?
Good question. So consciousness in quantum physics, it becomes the ground of all being. All experiences come from consciousness. Of course, this does not define consciousness. It just says consciousness is the ground of all experiences, ground of everything, ground of the question itself. So having said that, though, then how do we experience consciousness? That's much easier because this is closer to you. Even this is not as easy because, it's worldviews control us a little bit. Worldviews determine the way we experience the world, unfortunate. But it is true that the way we conceptualize will have some influence. So you have to gradually get into the habit of realizing that, but this is the right way of thinking of conscious experience. So when you say I have conscious awareness, what do I mean? I see immediately that in every experience that comes to me, my horizon, I am the experiencer. In fact, our language reflects that. Language differentiates between subject and object. I see a flower. Flower is object. I am the subject. The reason this experience is set up this way in the English language is because original people, people a little bit before our time, did not have the problem that we have today. They saw the experiencer much more clearly, that the eye experienced the flower. That's how the language developed. Today, if we have to develop that language, probably people would express it very different. Me saw the flower. People probably would not see the eye because they think of eye as an object. Me saw the flower. So me saw a flower. Me and flower are both objects. Then who is saying it? We forget. We forget and we just assume that, that's not important because that's the way scientific materialists bamboozle us, they brainwash us. But in reality, that subject-object split awareness is our conscious experience. So the way to understand consciousness is to find your I back. Now, when you try to do that, you will notice that the first I that you will encounter is what people call ego, and that is very much like an object. Why do we call an object an object? Because an object's behavior can be predicted. It is determined behavior. Newtonian physics predicts it completely. And even quantum physics agrees with that sort of. I mean, does not agree totally, but the disagreement is so little that we don't have to remember the quantum change in the Newtonian prediction. Newtonian prediction is more or less accurate. So that produces a camouflage. And same way, our subject also is very predictable. Very conditioned means very predictable. And this conditioned subject is, of course, what behavioral scientists insist that all there is to our subjective experience is conditioned. It's also an object. This is why me. When you say me thinks, then we are agreeing with that conditioning. Yes, me thinks means a conditioned me thinks. Both me and thinks can be predicted. Me and what me thinks, both can be predicted. That predictability of the world is what gives us the sense that it is all object. And this belief is now common.
Right.
Still, we use the word I, and that is a good thing. So we can start looking into the I. And as I said, if you sit quietly, very soon you discover the I. that this experience of oneness, almost oneness, wholeness, definitely a oceanic feeling is how Freud called it. He was a staunch materialist, but he liked to look at oceans. So he discovered the oceanic feeling in no time. Of course, he called it infantile helplessness, or, you know, he was a materialist after all. But his disciple, Carl Jung, insisted that, no, we have, there is a collective aspect of this consciousness too. So Freud's depiction of consciousness was, it has two compartments, that conscious awareness where there is this ego and the ego object and the experienced object, and then there is the unconscious, which is subconscious, really suppressed emotions and suppressed thoughts. That's what unconscious is, more or less all objects. But Jung actually revolted from this opinion and had his own ideas, became Jungian psychology, and here the indeed word consciousness is used in its, on its own, and subject comes back, and we have the concept of collective unconscious. There is also this collective humanity. There is part of the unconscious that belongs to everyone. And then it's a mystery. How can that be? In quantum physics, we explain it, because this collective becomes explainable, because this quantum physics, we look at consciousness as the ground of all being. So certainly that can have a collective part. In fact, quantum physics, we call it non-local. Non-local. It's a one kind of thing. All humanity have collective unconscious. So this is the way that science progresses. So we have an idea which is initially a little limited. Freud says the first scientific idea of two domains of reality, unconscious and conscious. But he thinks unconscious and conscious are both basically object. But then Jung brings in the idea that, no, there is subjectivity, because collective unconscious, that's not object. That has a oneness sort of thing. And then quantum physics explains it fully. Because quantum physics is saying, no, look, the domain of potentiality is what consciousness is, and that has the potentiality of both subject, the wholeness that we experience, and object, the separateness that we experience when we are experiencing the conditioned self experiencing object. And this way, then, we can trace back to the subject. And tracing back to the subject is sometimes called the spiritual journey. Who am I? First, you have to sense the I, and then you have to ask the question. So, what is the source of the I? And if you look at the source and follow the creative process, then you find that not only you have discovered the source of the I, but you have discovered a new source of your choice, free choice. You have discovered real freedom. You have discovered your way to creativity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now. When it comes to you mentioned about making decisions from the unconscious choices. How if we're not conscious of those choices, how do we direct, or how do we influence, or how do we make these how do we get to the unconscious to make these choices? Because, I mean, when we think about it, we're making a choice. Generally, we're making it from the conscious state.
Right.
You know,
and
if we are
in the conscious state, then we are conditioned, then our choices are nothing but a reflection of our conditioning. So it's
correct.
A dilemma. It's a dilemma, all right, but quantum physics resolves it. So what quantum physics says, that, okay, so you are unconscious, of course, so you cannot tell if you are making a choice.
Right.
But then it is more like a choice is happening, okay? But in the moment that the choice happens, the separation happens also. And that separation is very numinous. You know the word numinous, right? There are two words in English that describes the difference. One word is phenomena. That's where we are completely separate. But then there is experiences where we use the word numinous. Noumena means that the experience which has nuance. It has a sort of a wonderful wholeness in it. And that's the experience that I was talking about, that oceanic feeling, that experience
right.
of the I, that I in our original self, which I call quantum self in my books. So the moment we choose, we become, we experience ourselves as quantum self. So who is really choosing? Technically, quantum physics demands that the choice happens in the unconscious. But at the same moment, we become separate in the form of this quantum self. So quantum self is our doorway to that choice, that free choice. So although we are, technically speaking, making the choice in the unconscious, but in the process, we become quantum self. So if we are in the quantum self, we are actually making that creative choice also. It's just a way of speaking, from which side you are looking. If you are looking from the unconscious side, you would say, yes, objectively speaking, it's the unconscious which is making the choice. But you are looking from the conscious side, then you realize, oh, this happened, and I did not make that choice for my separate self, but I also acknowledge that I had a creative experience. So I, so there is that borderline. And that borderline makes you know that, oh, really, you have sort of the power to choose. You can create. And therefore, creative people are a little different. They have a more connection to the world. The world is not foreign to me. The world does not make my decisions. I really can be one with the world and make the decision.
Yeah, that's having that... That in itself is very empowering for people who sometimes feel that their choices, their circumstances are beyond their control and they have no power over it. A lot of times not realizing the power of choice.
Exactly. And they do have the power to choose, and all they have to do is to let go. Let go of the ego, which wants control at the conscious level. But if we give up that control, then always say that, yes, I chose, but I did not choose by rational thinking. And therefore, the choice is partly unconscious. But I know a choice happened because something new has happened. I know it very well. This is why I'm experiencing that noumenon, not phenomenon, where I see myself as separate, but noumenon. I see myself as one with the universe.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are halfway through the show, so I want to take just a really quick 90-second break. And then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, how quantum physics, how you know, people out there may not realize how quantum physics can influence and be a part of our world as we see it. And then there's a – I want to just touch on some of the topics that you had in your book for people to get an idea of some of the meanings of life, different types of meanings, okay? Okay, so great. We'll take a 90-second break and be right back.
Okay.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with me again today. My very special guest is Dr. Amit Goswami, and we're talking about his new book, The Everything Answer Book, How Quantum Science Explains Love, Death, and the Meaning of Life. And again, you can find out more about Dr. Goswami's books, also events that he has up and coming, by visiting his website, which is www.amitgoswami.org. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back. Dr. Goswami?
Hi.
Hi there. Okay. So, we talked the first half of the hour just about, about consciousness, quantum physics. So for the person out there who may be wondering, how does quantum physics affect my life? What in my world that I see around me, how does quantum physics show itself?
Yes, this is very important, and especially when materialists will tell you that quantum physics only pertains to the behavior of submicroscopic objects. When they're saying that, remember their basic assumption, and it's utter folly to assume that the world is like that. Their basic assumption is everything is material. So if everything is material, then, of course, at the macroscopic state of the material, as I said already in the first half of the show, its behavior is more or less Newtonian, although quantum physics predicts some minor deviations. But they are not important, I concede. But the point is, we also have experiences that we call experience of the psyche, internal to us, not external like the material experience. We experience material through our sensory organs. We call that sensing. But everybody knows that we also have feeling, we also have thinking, we also have intuiting. So where do those experiences come from? And what is the nature of these experiences? And why do we experience them internally? You know why? Because they're quantum. That's the simplest explanation. Nobody has any explanation why we experience the material world externally and the psyche world internally. Nobody can explain it without realizing that in the psyche, micro does not make up the macro. There is only one level of objects. A thought cannot be divided up and cut up into little pieces. Elementary particles of thought don't exist. So a thought is a thought is a thought. So what is it then? How does it come? Well, it comes also from potentiality, but these potentialities have no micro-macro division. In the physical world, micro makes up macro, so micro potentiality is very quantum, but the macro potentiality is not. They're Newtonian. But in the world of thinking or world of feeling, all potentialities are quantum. And therefore, between my thinking and your thinking, they have quantum movement, not Newtonian, predictable, very small movement at the macro level. In macro level, material object, quantum is gone. Quantum effects of movement is gone. But for thought, for feeling, for intuition, they're not gone. And this is why quantum movement is very much present. And quantum movement means a lot of movement. It's just a fact with quantum objects, just like electrons or protons, lot of movement. So what do you have? Between your thought and my thought, there is already too much quantum movement for you to think the same thing as I'm thinking. We don't pick the same meaning. A thought comes from potentiality of meaning, lots of meaning. You are choosing one. I cannot possibly choose that one because between your choice and my choice, the thoughts of the meaning have moved so much. So I end up choosing a different meaning. And that's why my thought and your thought are different, private, and therefore we think we are thinking thought internally. So this simple explanation of internal-external division shows to you that, yes, thoughts, feelings, and intuition, they are quantum, and therefore quantum physics is relevant to you. And immediately you see that the relevance of the world has increased by a huge amount because you can put value in feeling, thinking, and intuition. And if you put value on this, what do you find? You find there are very, very wonderful feelings, like feelings of love, and those feelings can make you happy. Similarly, you discover that just as there is rational thought, but you can also have elevated thought, as we are sharing in this talk itself. Why does it elevate you? Why does it inspire you? Why does Robert even have the name bringing inspiration to Earth? What does it mean? How does one bring inspiration to Earth? One brings inspiration to Earth by paying attention to these intuitions. Whenever we intuit these archetypes, like wholeness that we talked about, like love that we just mentioning, like justice, beauty, these are all inspirational thought. And this is what brings us extra quantum happiness that is not available when we just center on the material aspect of the world, only sensing.
Yeah. You know, you were mentioning, you know, values, you know, and you're talking about emotion, and, you know, many scientists, you know, kind of look at science as being free of values, but you claim that there is science behind ethics. I would love to, you know, get your sense of that, because it's so often they just seem to be separate, you know, and it seems that we really need to bring them together in order to have a clearer picture, a better whole picture.
Yeah. So why is ethics important to us, and what is its importance? This is the question. So then let's look at ourselves. We, of course, are very limited conditioned being, as behaviorists say, that me. And there are three aspects of our conditioning. One is the pleasure-seeking aspect. And the second one is that our emotions that is built into us are negative, basically. Anger, jealousy, competitiveness, lust, these are all negative emotions. And then we have that me-centeredness, that thinking about me only, what is in it for me in every transaction that we have with another person or with a system or with an organization. We're always thinking, what is in it for me? Some profit-making is going on in our mind. So this is what limits us. And then we have to recognize that compensating for this, the human condition has potentialities. And we have to pay attention to these potentialities. But there is not much we can do with the material potentialities. They become Newtonian, and the quantum movement is very restricted. So there is not much quantum creativity that we can engage in. But that is not true for our internal psyche experiences, those things that we call feeling, thinking, and intuiting. So that's where we have to engage to see the potential aspects of the human being, and we discover, oh, we have the capacity for noble feelings, love, and all that, higher feelings, feeling of wholeness, feeling of love. And then we have the capacity for higher thinking as well. We can think about love too. We can think about beauty too, not as well as feeling. But yes, we can do some thinking. And similarly, justice, wholeness, abundance, goodness. Ethics is about goodness, basically. That's an archetype. And archetype of goodness tells us basically that treat your neighbor like you want to treat yourself. That's basically is the all summary of all ethics in all traditions. Treat others as you would like to be treated by others. Makes sense? And why is it justified? Because we are fundamentally that oneness. Why shouldn't I? Because I am one with you. Except the difference is that oneness is in potentiality. So I have to first know you. I have to first intend that I be ethical with you. What's problem with today's person? Today's person doesn't really know the neighbor. How can I love my neighbor if I don't even know him or her, right? That's our problem. We don't actualize this oneness anymore. We have lost the capacity of relationship. Some places still actualize. This is the difference between the coastal places of this country versus the Midwesterners. Midwestern still actualize, although in a tribal sense. So they actualize people who go to church, and you know, here they are very segregated. This is what we saw in this recent election. White people voted one way, women voted differently, and black people voted very differently. Why is that? Because we have this clannishness. Women are clannish with each other, men are clannish with themselves, and blacks are clannish within their race, whites are clannish within their race, and all because they go to different churches, they go to different meetings, and there's no mingling, intermingling. This produces clannishness, and therefore the country become very polarized between races, between sexes. And this is not good because this is against the spirit of democracy. So you see how then this way that we treat the domain of potentiality determines how we are behaving in our economy, how we are behaving in our politics. Because we, under the aegis of scientific materialism, we have become very separate from each other in terms of very segregated, that's the right word. We still mix with other people, but we mix with only people who are of the same color, the same creed, same opinions, and that's how we create this. You know, people constantly talk about people living in balloons. That's what they mean. We become like that. We live in boxes, our separate box. Everybody has a box. And this is not the way to sustain these great institutions we have, like capitalism, democracy, liberal education. So everything is gradually failing. Education has been failing since the 1980s. Economy started failing in the 2000s, early 2000s. And now even politics, which we thought will never fail in America because we can communicate with each other, is now a disaster. And this will continue unless we change the worldview. The worldview got to change to from materialism to primacy of consciousness.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, we really do need that shift. And we, I mean, when you talked about the clans, I mean, I know I myself, you know, there are certain news stations that I listen to that have a particular viewpoint, you know, and there are some that I just, you know, that just, whose viewpoint is very different from mine, you know, I will often just avoid. But to your point, in order for me to really have a better sense of that connectedness, that is something that I shouldn't avoid, but I should embrace. I should go ahead and listen and try
exactly.
And understand.
And we become more happy by doing it. You know, this is the tragedy. We are not doing it. It's not a question of sacrificing. Oh, I feel more comfortable with my kind of people. No, that's not the case. We become more separate and we become more angry. Look, one thing that strikes out, no, that today people are more angry than they used to be. You cannot deny that this clannishness that you have now, a selective use of ethics, so to speak. Ethics cannot be selective. Love is not selective. Selective love is no love, and selective ethics is no ethics. If your ethics does not extend to outside of your clan, you are not ethical. Face it. If you are racist, you are not ethical. You cannot say that, oh, I'm good to my white neighbors. No. I'm good to my black neighbors. No. I'm good to women. No. That's not the way it works. You have to be good to men, women, of all people, of all color, all creed. It's
right.
not easy, no. But the reward is right there. You learn to treat them good, you will feel good. I mean, that's the amazing thing. Jesus said, you get back 100 times. That's what he meant. You give, you get back 100-fold. That is the truth.
Yeah.
So you get the reward right away. It's not a sacrifice. You give up the anger, you become happier. Okay?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, the two can't exist at the same time. You know,
no.
I mean, you can't be angry and happy at the same time.
No.
So, exactly. So, you know, you kind of mentioned a few of the social issues, you know, that we have right now, and how, you know, that quantum worldview would help. One of the, what would the quantum worldview be for dealing with things, you know, healthcare is one right now that is, I mean, because you talked about ethics and oneness and you know, just the sense of what is right and what is wrong, you know. And right now, I mean, you know, in this particular country, in our country, we have this health care issue that is so divisive, but it's also such a major problem. I mean, talk about anger, you know. I mean, you just need to look on TV and see how that. So how would, you know, a quantum worldview help in the area when it comes to just the issue of healthcare costs? And that kind of thing.
You know, the reason that the healthcare is such a divisive issue is that both sides make a very good point, but they don't see the solution in either side, and neither side really has a solution. I'll explain why. Because on the face of it, you know, to many people, the Democratic side making a lot of sense. Obama did fight for his healthcare bill, and we praised it, and there is some truth to that. But you know what the Republicans say, that one should not have big government and one should depend on people taking responsibility. Those things also are very true. They're correct, essentially. So when both people are correct and we cannot seem to be doing it in such a way that market capitalism can come into medicine, because indeed healthcare is not like something that you can make profit on, some aspects of it. So what is the remedy? The remedy, of course, is that, you know, we have been looking at one lens or the other, but we have not looked at with an integrative lens. If we do, we find that there is an answer to all this. Quantum worldview enables us to think in a very radical, novel fashion that solves the cost problem and solves the problem of how to bring private enterprise in and how to bring people's responsibility in there, and not big government, necessity of big government is eliminated as much as practical. And the solution is simply this. Yes, people should take care of themselves. It is true. And people don't do that today, and therefore we have huge medical costs. But why don't they do it? Because they live the way that scientific materialist has been teaching them, separatist way, and that breeds ill health. We are not taking care of our other bodies except the material body. We have mental body. We have a body of feelings. We call it vital body. We have also even a body of intuition and body of spirit. We are not taking care of those bodies. How do you take care of those bodies? I'll simply give you an example. Just love. Love is an experience of wholeness. It is also an experience of an archetype which brings in a spirit within us. It is also an experience of a noble feeling, and even thought of love elevates us. So love is such a general thing. And you know what? Love is connected with the functioning of the immune system. The quantum worldview clearly shows that if you don't love, if you eliminate love from your life, immune system gets awry. And what does that mean? That means all the autoimmune diseases, diseases like cancer, diseases like heart disease, all the major diseases that is costing us fortune. That's what really costs. I mean, it's not really that we get sick with influenza and we die. No, it's the immune system again. The immune system is weak, and therefore influenza leads to pneumonia, many people, because they become vulnerable. So if we keep a strong immune system, love is essential in our lives. How do we bring it back? But we need to. So therefore, we can devise an insurance system where the insurance will not be blanketly supportive of people's lifestyle. No, people also have to give. So it will become really a preventive medicine, and preventive medicine will be supported by government, indeed, that part, but it will cost much less, because preventive medicine has nothing to do with pharmaceuticals and allopathy and all this. Preventive medicine is simply an alternative medicine practice. You do more with the Chinese acupuncture, and you use homeopathy, and you use Ayurvedic technique. These are the things, or use nutrition. These are the things you practice yoga, you practice some of these wonderful meditative practices. That's how you prevent yourself from getting disease. That's how you take care of all of your bodies, not just the physical. So it is really quite simple. These medicine systems are not costly. Allopathy is costly because of surgery is very costly, and the pharmaceuticals are very costly because of the artificial way that, they have some justifications too. I'm going to ignore them. So, okay, but we can eliminate all that by just eliminating the basic problem. Yes, people do need to be responsible for their health. Republicans are right about that. Yes, we do need capitalism to intervene, and we do need to bring market economics into the health system. How do we do that? Government only provides for the preventive aspect of the health, and if you get sick, any case, emergency medicine, government pays for that. That's the insurance. But the rest of it is completely market. If you want allopathy and you have money, so you don't care about your health. You are neglectful about your health. You don't care about nutrition. You eat that very fatty steak every night. I have no way to oppose you. If you have the money, if you want to ruin your health, you have every right to do that, and then allopathy will save you. Allopathy will provide you with insurance that will cover all of your little illnesses that you will have on the way. And that's the way it should be. That's the way market economics should influence. Like today, we have a system of buying and selling. How does that work? Do I buy very expensive things? No, I count my pennies because I need to. But does a rich man buy those things? No, a rich man buys in a different market, very different story altogether. And capitalism serves us both. And that's the way that healthcare has to be. Capitalism also has to come in. So in this way, I can write a healthcare system, if I had the opportunity, you know, and solve the problem and make Republicans happy, make Democrats happy. It's all in my book, Quantum Economics. But unfortunately, you know, none of the political parties, they're so much in
right.
their boxes. They don't look at the quantum worldview.
I know. That's, you know, that's so true. First of all, that the idea of, you know, that preventative focus really is very much a proactive approach than the reactive to, you know, health conditions that result as a result of just not paying proper attention and taking responsibility for one's health. That makes complete sense. And we are down to the last few minutes here, Dr. Goswami. The hour has flown by, and I haven't even begun to touch on the things like, you know, what is the meaning of life?
That's very simple, Robert. Just invite me a second time, and we'll arrange with Sarah. I'll be happy to come and talk about it all in a second one. And that one will not touch healthcare. We won't touch the subjects we have covered already.
Well, that would be great. I would absolutely enjoy that very much. Now, I know that you are a very busy man. I follow you on Facebook, and I see that you've got, I mean, you just travel the world but I do enjoy following you on Facebook and watching the work that you do and appreciate the time that you're able to spend with me. So is there any final words of anything you may want to share with the listeners? About the Everything Answer book that we have.
I have Everything Answer book. When I was a child, when I was about 9 or 10, I think, I encountered a very wise thing in one of the spiritual treatises of India, and it said that when you find the highest truth, how do you know? You know because the highest truth leads you to all the answers. You know the answer to everything. Now, the highest truth that they post, of course, is the highest truth of all mystical traditions, same Christianity, same in Islam, same in Judaism. And the highest truth is, of course, consciousness is the ground of all being that we rediscover in quantum physics today. But the highest truth comes in quantum physics with an addition, and that's very helpful, which is that, and then the dynamics that the world follows is quantum dynamics. And that's the part of the highest truth that was missing in the olden days. So everything answered what answers everything where the spiritual traditions couldn't, because they had only half of the highest truth. Highest truth is consciousness, is the ground of all being, and it expresses itself in the world with quantum dynamics. That's the truth that if you follow, which is quantum worldview, then all of your problems will be solved. So my suggestion, please become quantum activist. If you have a friend who does not have the advantage of hearing me or reading one of the books or hearing any of the other quantum physicists who are proposing the same thing, paradigm is shifting in science that has to come to the world for quantum to become a worldview. Please help us do that. Become a quantum activist.
Absolutely. You had me, and when I again read your book, Quantum Activism, and Changing Civilization. So, you know, that's exactly what we need. And I just love thinking about my life in a view of potentiality. You know, recognizing that there is just so many possibilities for me to choose, either consciously or unconsciously, but to be able to recognize that is there, and it's just a matter of putting my attention to which you know quanta I want to go ahead and have actualized. So anyway, I just love it. So thank you again. I really appreciate your time, Dr. Goswami.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
My pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dr. Amit Goswami. We've been talking about his newest book, The Everything Answer Book, How Quantum Science Explains Love, Death, and the Meaning of Life. Again, you can find out more about this book as well as his other books and his events and calendar by visiting the website www.amitgoswami.org. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's B-I-T-E. RADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.